Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. The Navy says a full investigation is underway after accidentally shooting down one of its own fighter jets. The apparent friendly fire incident took place early today in the skies over the Red Sea. The Pentagon says the guided missile cruiser USS Gettysburg fired on and hit an American F-A-18. Both pilots ejecting and are okay. The U.S. is in the region trying to stop Iran-backed Houthi rebels from attacking commercial shipping. Meanwhile, today, Israel says its Air Force attacked strategic Houthi targets at both a Yemen port and deep inside the country. Reaction today from Panama's newly elected president after U.S. President-elect Trump said,
"We're being ripped off at the Panama Canal like we're being ripped off everywhere else. A secure," he just said, "take it back. That's a good idea."
In a video message to his nation, Panama President Jose Raul Molino saying every square meter of the Panama Canal and its adjacent zone is Panama's and will remain so. This is ABC News. Elon Musk spent more than $250 million helping the Trump campaign and last week played a key role in shaping the congressional spending bill. And while Trump today said Musk's influence will be limited,
no, he's not going to be president, that I can tell you.
ABC's Brian Clark tells us Musk's proximity to power is significant and to some concerning.
Elon Musk's opposition to some of the funding bills had some Democrats asking questions about his involvement in government.
He's not part of government, you know, having an impact on what's happening. And that's actually something that worries me.
Javier Benito in Florida. As for the Trump-Musk relationship, former New Jersey governor and one-time Trump ally Chris Christie says there is an expiration date.
It ends when Trump believes that something has gone wrong and he needs someone to blame. And Musk becomes the person to blame.
He was on ABC's This Week. I'm Brian Clark, ABC News.
And I'm Dave Packer, ABC News.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Big news in Wisconsin this month, as much of the controversial anti-union Act 10 law was struck down in a ruling by Dane County Circuit Court Judge Jacob Frost. Two takeaways on this. One, the ruling gets at the heart of what has always made this law so brazenly political, by defining public safety employees differently from general public employees. That decision was pretty clearly made not based on across-the-board policy, but on which unions backed Scott Walker for governor in 2010. It would be fitting if that is what ultimately spells the end for this controversial law. Secondly, this case is headed to an appeal, which almost certainly will end up at the Wisconsin Supreme Court. While this case still might be decided by the court's current 4-3 liberal majority, it's a good reminder of just how important the upcoming race for state Supreme Court will be.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
I'm James Kelly with WLAK News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WLAK website at lakeair.radio.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. Cleanup will continue into the new year at the state's largest oil spill in history in Jefferson County. It's owned by Canadian power company Enbridge, and Wisconsin tribes say Enbridge's lines are putting their environment at risk. They've been advocating for their land for years, and now that story is taking center stage, Judith Ruiz Branch reports.
An independent documentary highlights the struggles of northern Wisconsin's Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, including the tribe's lengthy dispute with Canadian energy company Enbridge. The film outlines the 70-plus year battle to get Enbridge's Line 5 pipeline off of tribal land. One person interviewed in the film is Patty Lowe, retired director of the Center for Native American and Indigenous Research at Northwestern University.
Everyone, whether you live in a red or a blue state, or whether you are Native or non-Native, want clean water and clean air, not just for themselves, but for their children and grandchildren.
After years of protest, a federal judge last year gave Enbridge 3 years to shut down the pipeline on the reservation. Last month, the state issued construction permits to reroute Line 5 about 40 miles south of the reservation by 2026. Lowell and others in the film say the proposed reroute isn't enough to protect their lands in nearby areas. Enbridge lawyers and the U.S. government say a 1977 energy treaty with Canada prevents them from shutting down the pipeline. There have been over 20 spills along the Line 5's 645-mile route since 1968, including more than 14,000 gallons in Bad River land. The film Bad River, A Story of Defiance, is streaming on Peacock. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, slight chance of light snow or freezing rain, a low of 26. Chance of snow for Monday with highs in the mid-30s. For Monday, mostly cloudy and 25. On Tuesday, clouds and 31. Mostly cloudy and highs in the mid-30s on Christmas Day.
Right now, it's 28.
Earl Ingram.
Join me on the next show for a Christmas edition of Motown Monday. We'll stroll down memory lane with some of your favorite Christmas songs and get you ready for the holiday.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 till 10.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Up North News Radio.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin.
For all of Wisconsin.
Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Welcome in to Hour 2 of the Civic Media Spotlight. This week marked 80 years since the beginning of the Battle of the Bulge in World War II, and to mark the occasion, Jim and John of Mino and the Mayor welcomed on 100-year-old veteran Jack Krasuski of Pulaski to discuss his memories of that day.
Coming to Northeast Wisconsin live from the Civic Media Studios and featuring TV and radio broadcast veteran John Mino, along with the City of Green Bay's longest-serving mayor, Jim Schmidt. This is Mino and the Mayor. Here are your hosts, John Mino and Jim Schmidt.
All right.
Hey, thank you very much. Welcome back. I'll tell you what, we've got a very, very, very special guest. I'm just going to pick up in my book from the chapter on this gentleman right here next to us. And this was 80 years ago today, basically, okay? When the Battle of the Bulge started in the middle of December, we were near the Rhine River. We didn't know anything was going to happen. The only problem was the weather. The coldest nights we'd ever seen. During the day, it was cloudy, foggy, and snowy, but we were relaxed. Things were pretty quiet. When the Germans did hit our front lines, they just pushed our infantry straight back. I don't know how many miles it turned out to be. I know we had to keep moving up through the deep snow for 3 days straight. They told us to be on alert for anything on the ground. In the sky, it didn't matter. Anything that came our way, shoot it down. For what we could tell, the Germans weren't stopping for anything. They told us to stay in the middle of fields, not in villages or towns, because we had to be able to see the German planes coming over. If there was even one tree in a field, we'd wrap a primer cord around it and knock it down so it didn't get in our way. I will say this, though, it's a miracle with the way they kept us fed. We had a lot of hot meals. I don't know how they kept us in food and supplies and everything, but they did. If they didn't cook something, they made sure we had rations at least. Those supply guys, food guys, ammunition guys, those were unsung heroes. As soon as the weather cleared, our bombers and fighters came in, and I'll tell you, they just blew that place apart. They attacked for 2 to 3 days straight. The sky was black with them going over during the day, and you could read a newspaper at night from the light of so many bombs exploding. When the crowd started fleeing, they blew up the bridges behind them. Our army engineers had to build pontoon bridges. They did it at night and under attack the entire time. They would build them in one day. The infantry and tanks went across first. We're right behind them. Once we're in Germany, we went through the Black Forest. That was a tough-looking area. Those pillboxes they had, they were about 3 feet thick. Our tanks took care of them. The big thing you had to worry about were mines all over the place. One day, we came upon a concentration camp. We could smell burnt flesh before we even got to it. It was full of displaced people. Jewish people, Polish, Italian, all different nationalities. There were people who had been healthy and strong enough to work for the Germans. Now they were so skinny there was nothing left to them, and all they had on was rags. I was fluent in Polish, so I started talking to them. They told me they got one meal a day, hot water with a piece of beet in it. It was a type of beet we used to use to feed our cows in the winter. We took care of them and fed them, but some of them were just too far gone. They were beyond help. We didn't know these kind of camps even existed. We went to a crematorium. Some of the bodies weren't completely burnt. They're just piles of bones. It was terrible. You could see empty canisters of the poison they had dropped down at the people who thought they were going to be taking showers. We would ask the German people what happened, about why they killed all the Jews and those other workers. Nobody admitted to knowing anything. They kept saying they had no idea. All they said was that the Germans wouldn't do anything like that. Pretty soon, word of mouth got to us. There were big pits around where the Krauts had lined up people, shot them, and covered them up with bulldozers. Other people said the guards would build wood piles and put the bodies on them and set them on fire. But the German citizens kept saying they didn't know anything about it. I don't know about that. One day, one of the Polish prisoners asked me if I could get some potatoes, so I bought him a couple of bags. I figured they were going to eat them. He wanted them to make moonshine. I don't think it was a week before they made it. They gave us some and warned me not to drink. It was powerful stuff.
Yeah. Thank God for the potatoes.
And the gentleman sitting next to us lived through that, Jack Krasinski. Jack, my friend, 100 years old, 80 years ago today, that was you in the middle of all of that.
Yeah.
Welcome, my friend.
Yeah.
How are you?
Pretty good.
Do you remember all that stuff still to this day?
Well, some of it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, most of it I remember, yeah. I remember the Book and Wild where they poisoned all these people and the guys that were able to, after they were dead, they had to take them to crematorium and burn them. And I never knew they were doing that. None of us knew it. So that made us a little angry at the Germans, so we had no mercy on them after that.
Well, we got our good friend Dennis Peters from the Glam Band. He was an artilleryman in the United States Army, just like you were. And you guys have a special relationship, no matter what era, don't you, Dennis?
Indeed, family. It's you know, we're brothers.
Brotherhood.
Brothers, indeed. Yeah, no matter what, you know, there's some common ground, no matter what.
But the respect you have for these type of gentlemen.
Oh, indeed, without a doubt, without a doubt. I mean, it's just, without you, where would we be, you know?
Yeah.
You know?
But talk about living history of gone through it and Jim, you're a huge historian type guy, you know, the history of Green Bay and everything, but isn't this great to have this gentleman sitting here?
I was talking to him out in the lobby and how spry you are and with it at 100. I mean, that's great. Happy birthday. I mean,
yeah. Well, I feel pretty good. You know.
You look fantastic.
You do. Yeah. You really do.
I was pretty sick about 6 months ago, but a Polish lady that's from Poland was my caretaker. And I told her I got a chance to go to Normandy, but I'll never make it, you know. And she says, "You make it. You do what
Isn't
I do."
Nice?
You know,
yeah.
And we joked around, and she got me through. And it was great to be able to celebrate the 80th anniversary of World War II. But
what was that like going back to Normandy, Jack?
Oh, I didn't remember too much of it. All I remembered is when we got off the water, you know, off the Dinglish Channel, and we drove roving trucks. I was operating a 50 caliber machine guns.
Whoa.
We had four of them in a
quad.
Anchored quad, oh. Yeah. And then I'd sit in the turret, and that was a good job, hey? We wore special glasses, and every fourth round was a tracer. So you couldn't miss them, you know. Oh, man. And we had so much firepower that anybody that came through never went back home.
No kidding.
Oh, boy. That's fun.
Beat in a video game, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
But, yeah.
And you said that you got angry when you found out more.
Well, we didn't think the Germans were doing that, killing all these Jews, you know.
Right.
And not only Jews, but old people and everything. They had to bring them in there by carloads and burn them up. Tell them they're going to take showers. They took their clothes off and put them all in the big room, and they put the cyanide in through the roof. And it was shortly after. They were
took anything of value they could find, you know, with gold.
Yeah.
You know, gold teeth, things of that nature, anything.
That.
You know, just, man. Yeah.
So how has it been? I mean, it's a long time ago, 80 years. Are you pleased with that people remember? Or what? How do you think the country is embracing, recognizes your that war?
Sacrifice, yeah.
Well, you mean our country?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. We don't talk about the war very much.
You when you came back, you did not at all, did you?
No. I was married to my wife 60 years. We never talked about the war. She never asked me, and I never told her.
Wow.
I think I would have, you know.
Right, right.
Some things, but she didn't want to know either. So.
But didn't you say you came back, and didn't your folks, like, you just walked into your house in the middle of the night, and your folks were, who's there? And it's like, Jack, I'm home from the war. It's like, okay, see you in the morning. Right.
Who's that guy?
Yeah.
What's in the fridge? Wow.
Yeah, I got off the bus, and we lived off the highway a little ways, and I had my clothes, and I, the middle of the night, I got off the bus, and the bus driver says, where are you going? He says, I live over here, just a mile away. He said, I could take you there. No, I can walk. So,
gee.
Wow. That's incredible. It's just,
I mean, think of these big homecoming parades. This is
right. And yeah. You're obviously not angry. You're happy. I mean, you seem to give a great disposition on life.
Yeah. We had a welcoming when we had, what do you call that? We went to Washington, D.C., the memorials.
Oh, yeah.
On the way home, there were so many people who welcomed us.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah, that honor flight.
That was a big welcome party.
Oh, yeah. Well deserved, too.
Yeah. But other than that, there was no parties for us or anything.
Right. And you came back and went to work?
Resumed what you were doing before.
Dennis, you were the same age as Jack when you were in the Army.
No.
What? No.
No,
but I'm just saying this. I mean, but you.
Most people were.
We don't realize sometimes how young our soldiers are.
Oh, for sure.
That's the
for
thing
sure.
I'm trying to get at.
They
you know what I mean?
We
send these young kids to war.
Right.
You're a kid, weren't you, Jack?
Right. 18.
Yeah.
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 And someone's younger, you know?
Well, if you volunteered and they didn't catch you, you got to be 18. You know? But I was 18 when I got in and 21 when I got out. But hey, every kid should go to the Army for a year or two.
I agree.
They teach you so many things, you know, respect and
discipline.
Discipline, and everything.
And a love for your country, too.
Work ethic.
Yeah, well, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, there's other countries that do that for 2 years. Yeah. And I think that's been talked about, and I'm not opposed to that either. I mean, we have a lot more incentives for people to go now than we did when you were there in terms of education and things when they get back. But so what do you do now? You're 100 years old. You're in great shape. What do you, what's like a day like?
I get up, I lay around, watch TV a little while. Then I get something to eat, and then I get something to drink. And it just, I go places a lot.
You're sought after. I mean, everybody wants to talk to you, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I got some friends. We'd go out and eat. And
I mean, but even the media would like to. We've been trying to get you on here for a year, so.
You're a tough act to get
into
the studio.
You are. Yeah. You really are.
But, Jack, you know, we're talking about, again, with Dennis, with these young kids. I mean, is there something that the government knows to send these really young kids to war? Because, and I hate to put it this way, but almost like they don't know any better and they'll take these orders and
that's
do whatever.
Exactly that,
That's it. We didn't know any better and we did what they told us.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, some days were a lot of fun. Some days weren't, but.
Talk about when it was so cold, you guys would try to get into hay bales or something?
Oh, yeah. That cold, I'd take straw off. They had raised a lot of mangoes. We fed that to our cows, and that's what these prisoners were eating. They'd give them that with a little boiled water. Anyhow, we'd steal the straw off of there and put it in a hole in the ground. And it was miserable. I never slept in a building from the time we left, got into France till the war was over.
Wow.
Day and night, and it was some days were miserably cold, you know. The Battle of the Bulge was goddamn cold.
Okay, that's cold. We'll let that go. He's 100. Let him go.
You guys had no idea how big of a battle, because didn't you guys pretty much think you're going to be home by Christmas, war was over?
Yeah.
Can you describe that, Jack?
Yeah.
That you guys thought it was over, and then all of a sudden the Germans come out with this huge offensive against you?
Yeah. Well, we were on the left flank, so they didn't. We never had a move. We were dug in, and our job was to shoot down the strafing planes and the low-flying bombers. And, hey, we had lots of firepower. In our battalion, we had 64 guns.
Wow.
And they'd line them up along the side of the roads, you know. And then nobody could get through. There was no way they could make it because, and nobody took credit for it when they came down because you got, 50, 60 guys shooting at them.
Yeah.
And
there's more coming, too.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Coming.
Jack, stick around. Yeah. Jack Krasinski.
Krasinski.
What, 100? Did I pronounce it wrong all the time?
Krasinski.
Krasinski.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, finally.
I'm Italian. We're not smart. 100 years old. 80 years ago today, he was in the midst of the Battle of the Bulge. Back after this.
Mino and the Mayor is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WISS and WGBW weekday mornings from 6 until 9. To learn more about this show and all of Civic Media's programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Peach Schwabba.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. And now a speech.
I just want to say that friendship is about heart and brain.
Who's with me?
Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
And my brain is saying, when it's time to go home, somebody call me a ride.
Love that guy.
Me too.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Earl Ingram.
Mr. Ben Wickler, he is running for the national DNC chair. The fundamental problem was the Democratic brand. Do you think that is the case more than the Harris campaign?
Core answer is yes. The Democratic brand, it's not what we necessarily do or say. It's what people have heard and internalized. And that, to me, is an argument for thinking about how and where we communicate, making sure we are present in places where people are thinking about stuff other than politics.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Next up on the Spotlight, we'll go to the Dom Salvia Show. Dom was joined by guest co-host Earl Ingram to talk about the looming government shutdown and who is casting its shadow. Elon Musk. No one elected Musk, but people did elect their legislators, who are now being overtly threatened by Donald Trump and Elon Musk. To hear more of any of these shows, download the Civic Media app available on the Google Play and Apple App Store. Or check out any of these shows in podcast form after the fact on Spotify, Apple Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842. Earl Ingram joining me this hour. You can check his show out 8 to 10 a.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network. Just PS is on the board. And the Republicans, a debate going on in the Assembly right now in Congress. And the reporting, Earl, it's getting pretty heated from the Washington Post. Arguments are very heated on the House floor, and Rep. Mark Molinaro, a Republican from New York, who's presiding over the chamber, has had enough, and apparently so has his gavel. While he was rapping the crowd to quiet down and quiet the rabble-rousing, the gavel shattered. Pieces of the wooden mallet are lying on the House floor. It's like my broken dreams, man. The gavel. You break the gavel. I mean, come on, man. What is going on? CNN Chiron is saying Johnson is going to speak as the GOP expects the funding bill to fail.
To fail.
Yes, that's apparently maybe they're doing some whipping and they don't know if they have the number of votes needed to pass. I mean, they have Republicans that have a problem with it. They have, you know, Democrats that had a deal that the Republicans backed out of because of Elon Musk. And they weren't even involved in having this conversation on this deal. So who knows? But if that's the case, then if this bill fails, where does that leave us, Earl? The Wall Street Journal had a couple of points on this regarding a government shutdown. How a looming U.S. government shutdown would affect you. Will it affect me? Will it affect you, Earl? Will it affect you at home? 855-752-4842. Now, as mentioned, they reached a bipartisan deal, but the spending package fell apart after Trump and Elon Musk had opposition to it. I mean, the fact that we even have to mention Elon Musk. I mean, you know, and I saw this from somebody else, but I had the original thought, Earl. Who's the big Democratic boogeyman?
Soros.
Soros, right. Man, if you had Soros sitting up there next to Biden, right? Right? Well, they would freak out, man. The Republicans would be all
explode.
Oh my God, if it was Soros.
Hey.
Oi. Oh, hey, of course he's Jewish.
Uh-huh.
I mean, come on. But it's apparently this is the new world. All right, so to keep the government funded, a spending bill must pass both the House and the Senate, and Biden must sign it into law before Friday's midnight deadline. That's tomorrow.
Ain't going to happen.
Midnight as in like in 6.5 hours?
At 12:01 a.m. Saturday. No.
Okay.
Yep. Friday night. Yep. Midnight Friday.
30 hours.
Saturday. Yes. Let's see. So what happens during the shutdown? Government offices continue essential work, but tasks deemed non-essential are put on ice. Paychecks stop, and many workers are furloughed until Congress passes new funding. The White House controls how agencies operate during a funding lapse, so the impact of a shutdown on the public will vary. Now, transportation, TSA, airport screenings would continue, but travelers might see longer security lines at the airport if unpaid TSA agents skip work. National parks are often closed. What else? Government services and many Americans rely on everyday life, such as Social Security payments and U.S. Postal mail delivery, would continue. Critical services like the Energy Department to ensure nuclear reactors are manned, those will continue, as well as would military and border control functions. But what else could be affected? Well, folks who are interacting with federal agencies for support, such as getting a new Social Security card, could experience delays. Environmental and food safety inspections have been delayed in past shutdown. Now,
oh, great.
Yeah, USDA nutrition programs, which support tens of millions of people, would likely operate on a skeletal staff. New loans for small farmers across the U.S. would be halted. Only a small number of HUD, Housing and Urban Development employees, will be on staff to answer emergency questions and process Federal Housing Administration issued loans. Its rental assistance programs wouldn't immediately be affected. So, you know, there's some of the issues. A government shutdown would cause roughly 875,000 federal workers to be furloughed, according to the nonprofit Bipartisan Policy Center. That estimate excludes military members. Now, you know, Earl, according to the Project 2025, you know, these cats aren't fond of the federal workforce. Do you think they give a damn if 875,000 people are laid off or furloughed, you know, a few days before Christmas?
You know what's worse? You know what's worse, Dominic? What you didn't mention? Congress still gets paid.
And they're asking for a raise in this one too, man. They want more money. They want more money. They get theirs.
Oh. Yeah, man. Come on, man. How ironic is it that you're voting for the average citizens and they'll lose or their pay will be shuttered, but not yours? What should occur is, if this is going to happen and it can happen, people should demand that Congress does not get paid.
Yes.
They created it.
Yes.
It's an insult that they get theirs. And many of the people, well, they're going to get it in the end, as you stated.
Yeah.
In the end. But no, man, it's unconscionable. And I've also stated before that this should never be. It's part of what they're saying is true. You've got to stop running Congress. The final, we're always at the 12th hour coming up with a continuing resolution. Man, sit down, hammer out the budget, get it done. And we wouldn't be stuck in these kind of situations, right?
Absolutely.
You got to get that. You know, enough of that is enough, but that's on Congress.
That is on Congress.
That's not on the people.
Yep, and that is a lack of leadership. Well, it's on the people to the extent that we elect, quote-unquote, these folks in Congress. Maybe right. We should do a little better job, Earl.
Yep.
do government shutdowns save money? According to the Wall Street Journal, the answer? No. According to most public policy groups and congressional research reports, federal workers receive back pay, and the acts of winding down operations and maintaining contingency plans cost taxpayer money. Quote, a government shutdown where we end up paying people not to work is precisely at odds with the important objective of DOGE, which is to increase efficiencies. Yeah, you think? Hey, let's shut it down. We're going to increase efficiencies by paying people not to work and increasing the operational costs of the less efficient business that gets done. Yeah, let's do that. Way to go, Elon. 855-752-4842. Who's pulling whose strings? You know, when the marionette strings get tangled up, you know, the whole thing falls apart. Come back with us, 855-75-CIVIC.
The Dom Salvia Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from 4 till 6. To learn more about this show and all the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Matinee on Air.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. The Navy says a full investigation is underway after accidentally shooting down one of its own fighter jets. The apparent friendly fire incident took place early today in the skies over the Red Sea. The Pentagon says the guided missile cruiser USS Gettysburg fired on and hit an American F-A-18. Both pilots ejecting and are okay. The U.S. is in the region trying to stop Iran-backed Houthi rebels from attacking commercial shipping. Meanwhile, today, Israel says its Air Force attacked strategic Houthi targets at both a Yemen port and deep inside the country. Reaction today from Panama's newly elected president after U.S. President-elect Trump said,
"We're being ripped off at the Panama Canal like we're being ripped off everywhere else. A secure," he just said, "take it back. That's a good idea."
In a video message to his nation, Panama President Jose Raul Molino saying every square meter of the Panama Canal and its adjacent zone is Panama's and will remain so. This is ABC News.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
The Packers get ready for Monday night. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Packers host the New Orleans Saints. Green Bay will be without safety Javon Bullard and linebacker Quay Walker, both with ankle injuries. Jair Alexander practiced all week but remains questionable. But Matt LaFleur says, knock on wood, right now the team's pretty healthy.
I just think that this is such an unpredictable sport in regards to when guys get injured or whatnot. So we just... we're in a good spot right now.
NBA, the Bucks beat the Wizards 112-101. Bobby Portis with 34 points for Milwaukee. College hoops, Marquette held on to win on the road at Xavier 72-70. Cam Jones had 20 points. Head coach Shaka Smart, though, asked how he would grade him.
B-. I'm hard on him. There's nobody I'd rather have in the country. I wouldn't trade anyone for Cam Jones, but he can be better. He can be more efficient. He has to understand that if he doesn't have an angle, he's got to get to 2 feet. And he's got to be strong with the ball.
That's Marquette head coach Shaka Smart with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, slight chance of light snow or freezing rain, a low of 26. Chance of snow for Monday with highs in the mid-30s. For Monday, mostly cloudy and 25. On Tuesday, clouds and 31. Mostly cloudy and highs in the mid-30s on Christmas Day.
27 right now at our studios.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. New York City Mayor Eric Adams was denied access to over $4 million in matching public funding for his 2025 campaign due to questions over an ongoing federal investigation and accusations of financial mismanagement. The U.S. Department of Justice filed charges against the mayor in September, charging him with taking campaign donations from foreign nationals and businessmen, allegedly using straw donors to make them appear as legitimate donations. He is also accused of doing favors in exchange for luxury travel and attempting to conceal these transactions, according to the DOJ. The New York City Campaign Finance Board ruled December 16th that Mayor Adams' request for $4.5 million in matching funds would be denied. The chair of the board said in a statement, "After thoroughly reviewing all available information, including the details of the indictment of Mayor Adams, the board has determined there is reason to believe the Adams campaign has engaged in conduct detrimental to the matching funds program in violation of law, including the Campaign Finance Act and board rules." New York City's campaign finance system provides an 8-to-1 match for small donations of $250 or less for mayor and $175 for city council. Such small donor financing systems promote transparency, discourage big money, and encourage less affluent candidates to run. We have links to more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
The Todd Alba Show.
UW System spends $51 million of our taxpayer money for consultants. Three times the budget shortfall that triggered the Oshkosh layoffs in 2023. Why is there such silence from Democrats in the state capitol on this? Ask people at Richland Center, Waukesha, Washington County, if they got their $51 million worth for the UW system.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Mino and the Mayor.
On Monday's show, a very special gentleman will be joining us after 8 o'clock. We're told he's visiting from the North Pole before his big trip around the world.
And you'll definitely want to listen because he's bringing a special gift for you, our listeners. Join us.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Civic Media Spotlight. Up next, we'll hear from the John and Gordy Show. John and Gordy welcomed on their weekly guest, Mike McCabe, to discuss a variety of topics, but most importantly, his latest blog post about criminal folk heroes, in which he draws parallels between 1930s bank robbers and Luigi Mangione.
John and Gordy on the radio, 92.7 is the place to go. It's John and Gordy, John and Gordy, John and Gordy, John and Gordy. In the morning, in the morning, in the morning, in the morning. It's John and Gordy,
it's
John and
Gordy, John and Gordy. 92.1. WMDX.
That's us, John Peterson and Gordy Young.
Oh, I like the full names.
Yeah, we've been going with that lately.
Mike McCabe is our guest again, as always, from Substack, and you've got a few really good posts here. Let's get to the first one that you, this is kind of a personal thing for you, and this was posted in The Bulwark. And it's titled, Open Government Nonprofits Are Dying Off Just When They're Needed Most. Tell us about this.
Yeah, what's happening?
Well, I ran a group called the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign for 15 years. Yeah. And we specialized in open government and dealing with money in politics and all those kinds of things. And when the Citizens United decision came down from the Supreme Court allowing billionaires and corporations to spend as much as they wanted on elections, you'd think that that would have been a moment where the need for money in politics watchdogs and the need for transparency, the need to let the public know who's buying our government would have been heightened. But all the charitable foundations around the country that had been funding that kind of work basically just threw up their hands and fled the scene and said, we'll just work on voter turnout and voting rights, and we'll deal with other democracy topics. But those kinds of things, the open government, the anti-corruption efforts, the bird dogging of money in politics, they just fled the scene. And we actually lost a grant that was half of our operating revenue at one point, had to scramble like crazy to fill that gap. We were successful in being able to do it, and we didn't have to lay off any staff, but we survived, kept our heads above water. But it's been a struggle for these kinds of groups ever since. Now there are national groups. One's called Open Secrets.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That has a national database of donors to politicians.
They have a big name.
And Open Secrets has laid off half of their staff because of the loss of funding. And it looks like that group might go under. The Center for Public Integrity, another group that looks at tries to maintain high ethical standards for public officials by being careful watchdogs of ethical behavior. They look like they're going under. Because big funders out there have just decided, we're going to spend our money elsewhere. And so right at the time when we need these resources to help the public understand what is being done behind the scenes to influence those who are making decisions in our government, these groups are imperiled. And to the point where some of the big names in that universe, like Open Secrets, Center for Public Integrity, may have to close their doors altogether.
Yeah.
They're already severely weakened, and they're really teetering on the brink, and they may have to close their doors. Wisconsin Democracy Campaign is a group that, I ran for many years, does this kind of work here in, our state, and it's still going strong. Mm-hmm. But again, the funders are trying to steer groups like that away from watching money in politics, watching ethics in government, you know, trying to maintain open government that, the public can actually see. They're trying to steer them toward other kinds of interests, and that's a shame. And yeah, you said that this is personal to me. It's something that I've spent much of my life working on, and that work is very much in danger.
Well, it seems to me that people have turned more to alternative media at this point, and we have heard so much during the last election that the election turned on what people felt. And the groups you just mentioned deal with facts and figures. People are turning away from the facts and figures and going to more of how they feel, and maybe going to a media outlet that makes them feel right or good or substantiate what they believe. And we're just talking about beliefs and, you know, just thoughts and how
well,
people
you
feel.
You're listening to podcasts and things like that.
You had a clip with Rachel Maddow just earlier in the show, the last half hour. Yeah. And the point was made that Elon Musk had put in something like $250 million, $250 million to influence the election. One of the things that we specialized in doing is trying to find those hidden ways that money flows and bring that to light. I've seen research or data that suggests that if you look at all of the different ways that Elon Musk used his wealth to influence the outcome of the election, that it probably was in excess of $1 billion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Four times as much as was transparent, was readily visible.
Right.
And the groups like Open Secrets or Wisconsin Democracy Campaign here closer to home, or Center for Public Integrity, those groups specialize in doing that kind of investigative journalism, that digging, that sleuthing that allows the public to eventually learn how much is really being done behind the scenes to influence the vote. And I think it's very fair to say that Elon Musk's total commitment financially to the 2024 election was close to or in excess of $1 billion.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I know that, I peruse X all the time, and I'm getting all the Elon Musk posts.
Yep.
And one post that he put in there was somebody had posted that no one's turning to media anymore, the old media, and now they're going to the new media, and that X is your source for news. And he reposted that.
Yeah.
And that's the message he's getting across at X, that, and it is balanced in a way. I know that it is balanced, but at the same time, he's an extreme P.T. Barnum-ish owner of X. And
oh, it's
he
not,
is doing everything
it's not
he can.
Balanced at all, because he can create algorithms that make sure that everybody sees his posts, and he can throttle posts. Those algorithms will throttle posts that provide a dissenting view.
Right.
And that is happening on X every single day. People are forced to see what he posts.
Yes.
And so he has tens of millions, hundreds of millions of views of his posts. And then the Center for Public Integrity, if it puts something on X, it will be seen by hundreds of people, maybe thousands of people, but not tens of millions or hundreds of millions of people.
You're right.
So that is how the thumb is put on the scale on these big social media sites.
Absolutely.
Is the way the algorithms are written to favor certain communication and to throttle other communication.
Well, I was going to add.
Yeah.
Before you threw that in, I was going to add the fact that, a lot of the people that I follow don't show up anymore. So I'm not seeing what they're saying anymore.
Right.
and I'm seeing a lot of what he's saying. Right. Even though the stuff is included on X, it's not being seen by the people that need to see it.
Correct.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, and some of them are going over to Blue Sky. A lot of people are hitting Blue Sky now.
Or Blueski is.
Or Blueski. Yeah. That's
who knows how it's pronounced.
It seems like that's it's continuing to grow by leaps and bounds.
Yeah.
So that's hopeful.
You think about getting there or putting something on there?
I have not yet, and I am on a number of different social media platforms and really don't want to add another. My favorite is Substack.
Yeah.
Because it's a place where much more
thoughtful
and lengthier kinds of communications are not only allowed, permitted but they flourish. Yeah.
There's a word limit on all the other ones.
Right.
You posted another one. Again, let's talk length on this one. You posted mass shootings, a list of mass shootings since Columbine.
Yeah. I posted that on Facebook because there's not a word limit there. I tried to post it on LinkedIn, but there is a character limit on LinkedIn, and you couldn't put the whole list on there. I also posted it on Substack. There's a dimension of Substack called Notes, which is a little bit like X or Blue Sky or any of those other platforms. Mm-hmm. It's shorter kinds of posts, and I posted it there as well. But basically just looked at that defining moment, the Columbine Massacre in Littleton, Colorado, 25 years ago.
Yeah.
And, of course, everybody said then, there was shock and horror across the country, and everybody said never again, no other community should have to endure what Littleton, Colorado had to endure with the Columbine Massacre. And since that time, I posted the list of every community that's been affected by school shootings ever since, and the list goes on for 25 years, and it's well over 400 communities across America. And you literally have to keep scrolling and keep scrolling and keep scrolling as you go through this list.
You know how you kind of flick the screen and
right.
I mean, it just rolls on on. It's just outrageous.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's hard to believe.
That, and hopes, thoughts and prayers were offered after each one of them.
Yeah. And nothing done. And now they're protecting us from transgender athletes. I mean, that's their focus. Yeah. Not shootings in schools, but transgender athletes, which I think there were less than 10. At a current hearing, they talked to one of the sports guys that handles college sports and said, there's like 510,000 athletes, but less than 10 transgender athletes.
Yeah, and the school shooting list that I posted started with the first community right after Littleton 25 years ago. And the list, of course, ends with Madison, Wisconsin.
Well,
now you had some other posts since we last talked, right? You
want to
mention one of those?
Well, the latest one that you put out is
on Substack.
Yes, the canary. Tell us about that article.
Well, that had to do with healthcare.
Healthcare.
And of course the shooting of the health insurance executive.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's been all this yammering on social media. Sometimes it almost seems celebratory. Others are firing back and are condemning the shooter. And for me, I don't care what the question is. Murder's not the answer. But what came to my mind when I saw so much of the chatter on social media was the dinner table conversations with my dad back in the day during my childhood. And, my dad was a dairy farmer and fought in World War II and only had an eighth grade education, had to drop out of school at the age of 14 because his dad died of colon cancer. So he had to run the farm starting at the age of 14 to take care of his mom and his sisters. And, he earned an honest living his whole life and at one point went 35 years without a day off, worked seven days a week for 35 years. But he used to sit at this upper table and tell of these gangsters, these outlaws, like John Dillinger and Babyface Nelson and Pretty Boy Floyd and Ma Barker and Bonnie and Clyde. And they were bank robbers. And it was so reminiscent of what we're hearing now about Luigi Mangione.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I just had to imagine that Dad didn't think much of bankers because they tended to take people's land away from them and foreclose on farmers and put them out of business. And
gangsters became folk heroes.
And after the break, we can talk a little bit more about the parallels between that era, where it was the banks ruining people's lives.
And healthcare.
Yeah, today. We'll be back with more with Mike McCabe in just a moment.
The John and Gordy Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WMDX weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
Let's get back to live music in the lair with Kaylin Cole. The next song you have for us tonight is called 1103.
Yes.
Is that a time or a flight number?
Oh, that's actually really good. That's a good idea. I think I might have to write another song with that. You'll get 50%.
It's live in the lair. Grab the podcast now at MaxIncRadio.com and listen live on Saturday night, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Badgers.
Feeds Max, fakes the three, takes the three, left side, yes sir.
Fades.
Pivots, fades, flips, good again. Just outside the left elbow.
Here.
Goes up, got it, with the right hand, it counts and a foul.
This is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger basketball.
Slam dunk, Steven Crow hammers it down.
Catch every game all season long right here on the Badger Sports Network from Learfield.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Up North News Radio.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Closing out the spotlight for this week, we'll hear from the Todd Alba Show. Todd, ever a defender of the UW system, covers a new article from WORT that the UW Board of Regents have spent a staggering $51 million on consultants over the last 4 years.
Wherever it may lead, and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Todd Alba Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. 9 before the hour of 1 o'clock. At the top of the hour, a CBS and ABC News update for you, depending upon the station. A sports update with our great sports reporter, Mike Clemens. And our weather team will update you on the situation across Wisconsin. Some winter storm warnings in effect into tomorrow for parts of the state, including our listeners at WGBW in Green Bay and parts of the Fox Valley for WISS in Oshkosh. Several inches of snow could be on the way for most of Wisconsin. First big snowfall of the season for most of us. So gird your loins or something like that. Why would you need to gird your loins for snow? I'm not sure, but that's
what I was asking.
All right, I want to get more. Maybe we'll get into this. Lots to get to with Trigvy. Trigvy Olson's going to be here in hour number two. And also, we're going to give you a chance to win a $100 bill. $100 next hour in our grown-up gift list text to win contest. Also going to be eligible for 8 grand prizes. Going to be given away at the end of this week randomly by computer choice. A robot vacuum, a humidifier, espresso machines, snow blower, and luggage. All that and more. So download the Civic Media app right now, and then we'll tell you the magic word next hour, and you can enter in. Somebody next hour wins $100. It might as well be you. All right. Great reporting by WORT, WORT Radio. 98.9, a community radio station here in Madison, a legacy station in Madison. Great community reporting. The reporter on this, Sarah Gabler of WORT News Department, Headline, UW System spends millions on consultants. $51 million. That's how much money the University of Wisconsin system paid Chicago-based Huron Consulting Group between 2019 and 2023. Neil Krause says that number is quote-unquote astronomical. Krause is a professor of political science at UW-River Falls and president of United Falcons, the campus branch of AFT Wisconsin. He tracks the University of Wisconsin's budget cuts, technology spending, and austerity measures. Now, again, we're limited on time here, so we're not going to go into the whole story right now. Might talk about with Trigvy, or we'll do it on another show, maybe tomorrow. But I want to read you a couple of sentences here from this reporting at WORT. Quote, from the records we were given, we learned that the University of Wisconsin system holds several multi-year contracts with Huron Consulting that total over $51 million. That includes a contract for the rollout of a new statewide workforce technology program called Workday that cost over $47 million. Another contract shows that Huron designed and facilitated a workshop for institutional realignment. So these consultants put together a workshop, i.e. a meeting and a PowerPoint, called Institutional Realignment at UW Oshkosh in August of last year, just months before the layoffs. That workshop cost $24,000. UW system spent $24,000 of our tax money to hold a workshop on how they were going to take people's jobs away and close down two-year campuses.
And they sure did.
The $51 million spent by the UW system between 2019 and 2023 on contracts with Huron is almost three times as much as the $18 million budget shortfall that triggered the Oshkosh layoffs in 2023. You understand this? The consulting fees paid for by our tax dollars that UW System spent was three times more than the budget shortfall that closed the campuses the 2 years at the Oshkosh campus. More reporting from WORT, consultants were paid $275 to $310 per hour. The UW system redacted these hourly rates from the documents they sent us. Oh, I bet they did. Krause, who teaches at UW River Falls, is concerned that the UW system is ceding control to corporate interests. Great reporting by WORT. Isn't anybody a block away from me right now at the state capitol paying any attention? And I don't mean just Republicans. I mean anybody.
Hey, Tony Evers said that they're doing the best
right,
they can.
Right. Tony Evers, when it comes to the UW system, Tony Evers is the George W. Bush of Wisconsin. Remember when Hurricane Katrina hit in Louisiana and the FEMA secretary went down there, Brown? And George W. Bush said, you're doing a hell of a job, Brownie. That's essentially what Tony Evers said to Jay Rothman. Well, you know, he's doing the best that he can. Gee willikers, I'm all jazzed up. Doing the best that he can? I do not understand why Democrats are not making political hay on this. And not just political hay, actually getting something done. Why is there such silence from Democrats in the state capitol on this? Because they seem to be complicit with the idiot Republicans, not voters, but the legislators who continue to cut the budget of the UW system and want to see these schools close. $51 million of our taxpayer money for consultants to tell people how to make it better. Ask people at Richland Center. Ask people at Waukesha. Ask people in Washington County if they got their $51 million worth in consulting fees for the UW system. Back with hour two after this. It's the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. $100 on the line. You could win it. And Trayvon Olson, don't go anywhere. It's the Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Todd Allball Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from noon till 2. To learn more about this show,
you're listening to Lake Air, WLAK. Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, political consultant Joe Sopecki joins us and another edition of This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
Do you hear that? Asthma triggers are everywhere, from dust mites, pet dander, and pollen, to smog and smoke. An asthma attack can strike anywhere, anytime. Be prepared with quick-acting Primatene Mist. Clinically proven to open airways quickly. It's the number one FDA-approved asthma inhaler available over-the-counter. Primatene Mist. Breathe easy again. Use as directed.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. Gasoline prices have been lower for many months, and now, even at a high-demand time, holiday traveling, they're not spiking in most places, and apparently people like this person in Dearborn, Michigan, have noticed.
I'm happy because I commute every day, so it helps.
They expect to screen nearly 40 million passengers at airports between December 19th and January 2nd, says the Transportation Services Administration at Philadelphia International Airport.
We were prepared for mayhem. We had, you know, all of our bags packed and extra material ready to go just in case, but so far so good.
The U.S. Military Central Command says the guided missile cruiser USS Gettysburg mistakenly fired and hit an American F-A-18 warplane over the Red Sea. Both pilots ejected safely. One has minor injuries. The Red Sea is between the Arabian Peninsula and Africa. In Orlando, Florida, at the PNC Golf Tournament today, Tiger Woods' son Charlie made a hole-in-one. He's 15. This is ABC News.